Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films. Every week we talk about current cinema, the latest trailers, and we pick a new favorite film every single episode.
But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts!
Don't say that! Never say that! Goonies never say die!
You're the best! We're the beautiful! We're the only!
Now, here's your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I am your host, Kyle Autry, joined as always by my co-host, JD. JD, how are you, man?
Feeling a little spooky, ready to get some sleepy in me. There's no better way to spend a summer than at a sleepaway slumber camp. And summer's coming soon. So, you know, I'm just saying, I'm ready to jump in the sleeping bag, fire off a couple of brown noises, and see where the night goes.
I love it. And we're going to dive into that in just a minute. You guys are listening to the teaser trailer episode, and we're discussing the 1983 horror film Sleepaway Camp, if you didn't pick that up from the intro from JD. I want to take a quick second to thank our sponsor, Bunny17 Media, who helps bring you this podcast completely free. Go over to their site right now, bunny17media.com. Use promo code BACKINTIME at checkout and save 15%. Also, best way to help support us and grow this podcast is to rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or YouTube. That doesn't cost you guys anything, and that'll make sure that you guys never miss an episode. Now, JD, last week, we had kind of a week off, and we had an interview with comedian Kevin Goatee. So if you haven't listened to that episode, go check it out. Had a good time with Kevin. But the week before, we were discussing American Pie. JD, what kind of feedback did you get from our American Pie episode?
I was so, like, choosing American Pie, I personally thought was a great opportunity to review a late 90s movie that brought an ensemble cast. And I was happy to hear that a lot of people really related, and it brought a lot of nostalgia and conversations that I had with some listeners that they were kind of like, "Ah, listen to the episode. Hey, you remember in high school this, remember in college that." So it was kind of like really cool to relive a lot of those moments with other listeners and, you know, with friends and people that I went to school with over the years that American Pie starts those conversations with. And I think that's why that movie holds up. And I think it'll hold up for another 10, 20 years until the robot overlords take over.
They're coming. No doubt about that. Now, just to preview the full episode and kind of prepare you guys for that, we're going to be joined on that episode by Terrible Tear Podcast. If you have not checked them out yet, jump on the YouTube or iTunes, find them on there, throw them a subscribe and follow them on social media, and then we're going to have them on the podcast. I think it's just one guy. I haven't actually met him yet. It's just been some DMing back and forth. But I'm looking forward to us having another guest on the show. JD, I want to start with first memories of Sleepaway Camp. When is the first time you can remember watching this movie?
It was definitely college. And I feel I got a little bit bamboozled because I want to say the first time I watched it, I thought I had seen it before, but I was definitely confusing it with a different movie. And for those of you who have seen Sleepaway Camp, the ending in itself is so memorable that you can never confuse if you have seen it or not. And literally the first time I watched it, immediately after watching it, I had to watch an episode of Bobby's World, the cartoon, because I was just so like in a panic of fear that I was like, I can't sleep. I need some sort of good in my life. So of course I put in Bobby's World. And then I rewatched Sleepaway Camp and then watched Bobby's World again. Great night.
You really do like Bobby's World. That's no joke.
No, it's no joke. It's an amazing cartoon.
Correct me if I'm wrong. That the voice of that is Howie Mandel?
You are absolutely correct. It's germaphobe Howie Mandel himself.
Also, one of my my favorite movies growing up, Little Monsters, star of that movie with Fred Savage. That's a future episode.
Not to be confused with Little Giants, starring Rick Moranis.
I don't see the similarity.
If you look hard enough, it's like your penis, you can see it.
It's down there somewhere. We'll figure it out. Now, JD, would you like to ask me my first memory of Sleepaway Camp?
Oh, how rude of me. I apologize. Kind sir, do tell, what was thou'st first memory of Sleepawayest Camp?
So nice of you to ask, because you were the one that actually introduced me to the movie. Do you happen to remember that day?
So I sincerely feel like, obviously, it was me. It had to have been me. Like, I used to keep a running chart of the people that I would introduce Sleepaway Camp to. It was like introducing somebody to Two Girls, One Cup. Like, you have to pass it on. So I'm not surprised that it was me, but while I do feel like we've probably watched it a number of times together, I don't necessarily remember our losing of Sleepaway Camp virginity together.
Okay. Well, speaking of Two Girls, One Cup, we were also joined by the in viewing Sleepaway Camp with Jesse from Two Guys, Good Vibes in their podcast. And we were over at your parents' house and you popped it on. I had never seen it before and you kept talking it up and you're like, you gotta wait till the ending, man. Just wait till the ending. And I stuck through all 84 minutes of it and the ending did not disappoint. Now, little known fact to all these back in time pod listeners on here, later that night, we would actually go film our own little movie, which you can find on YouTube, and it's called Slurpees. We used a little handheld camera and it made about a 10 minute short about pretty much nothing. But I do kill JD with a giant samurai sword / knife, not sure what we call it. And yeah, I murdered him.
All good nights end like that. For what it's worth, I implore our audience to never search down the movie Slurpees. Do not watch Slurpees. Save your money for a pizza parlor massacre.
Much better. We got to get a copy of that on YouTube. I can't find my copy anywhere.
Yeah, we ran into trouble with trying to find a copy of that when we were at Pizza Parlor Massacre. Was actually invited to be a part of a book that an author was writing that was the definitive serial killer movie slasher. He wanted everything, and he wanted to include Pizza Parlor Massacre, and we had to say, we don't have a copy of it.
But you can buy one on Amazon for $2.99. Well, at least you used to be able to.
Yeah, Amazon changed all of their rules with that, so we hit a hiccup. But word of the wise to all you young filmmakers, do back up all of your copies, because 10 years down the road, maybe your short will be relevant.
That's a bummer. Can't believe we missed out on the book. Oh, well, let's move ahead here. We got more Sleepaway Camp to talk about here, so let's go ahead and fire up the trailer. If you're by a computer, you have access, we're going to get onto YouTube. You type in Sleepaway Camp original trailer, and you're going to be looking for the trailer titled Sleepaway Camp Trailer, uploaded by Sam Barrows. It has 285,000 views. I will give a 3, 2, 1 click countdown, and we will watch this thing together. JD, are you ready?
Pull down my pants, have a shot of tequila in each hand. Couldn't be more ready.
All right, I don't know why you pulled your pants down, but anyway, let's do this. 3, 2, 1, click.
Dear Mom and Dad, I've been at a sleepaway camp for almost 3 weeks, and I'm getting very scared.
Welcome to Sleepaway Camp. Someone is watching you.
Hey, Mama Reba!
Someone is waiting for you. Someone wants to scare you to death. Sleepaway Camp. You won't be coming home.
Okay, JD, I'm completely frightened, but I'm going to let you go first. What'd you think of the trailer?
So I'm glad that we get epic voiced 80s guy in this trailer because he's obviously fantastic. I kind of had forgotten how gruesome the music and the score was. It's very unsettling. Just that, like, it's like, it makes it seem very fast paced. It's very chilling. I don't think it really doesn't give anything of the story away. And
not a thing.
For what it's worth, it's a very intricate, very complex, very layered story about what is going on. And we have no idea based on this. We just know teen sleepaway camp, death, old dudes falling in the crock boiling pot of water. And I don't know. I don't think it's the best of trailers, but I think it does a great job of taking a lot of the chills and the thrills and putting it on a platter and saying, come here, kids, come eat this. It's not poisons. I don't know what that was, but we're doing it.
Print it. Yeah, man, I think the trailer, for all intents and purposes, I think it gets the job done. It definitely feels a lot faster than I remember the movie actually being, which is good. We definitely don't want to bore people to death. And I would say if I was in 1983, I would be running, not walking, to the movie theater to watch this thing opening weekend. That would be my takeaway. And of course, I love voiceover guy because that's what we're missing in today's trailers. Get rid of all the loud music. Bring back the voiceover guys. We need them.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There's, as we've discussed in many of our episodes in the past, there's a lost art to the movie trailer. And a big part of that is this guy's voice. I've given an express shout out before to Screen Junkies and their honest trailers and their epic voice guy. If you want to hear a great example of what a voiceover of a movie trailer should be, watch an honest trailer because, boom, they nail it.
Yeah, I haven't been a huge fan of theirs in the past, but I'm definitely going to check them out because you've talked about them a couple times now. I think I did watch the honest trailer review for Super Mario Brothers before we did that episode.
That's a great one. They've got a lot of great content, a lot of great original thoughts. They put a lot of effort into what they do. And, I have to admit, I'm refreshing my browser at 10 a.m. Pacific time for when they release their new content on Tuesdays you don't know what they're going to do. And you see the new movie and it's always a joy.
Yeah. So if you're a fan of what JD's talking about, get on YouTube, give them a subscribe and let's check out some of those trailers. Now, let's move into the box office numbers. And I'm going to be honest, this is probably going to be the shortest box office number segment we've ever done because there really is not much and probably more to discuss than to actually tell. But Sleepaway Camp debuted at the box office on November 18th, 1983. It was distributed by American Eagle Films with a runtime of 84 minutes and a production budget of just $350,000. Unfortunately, again, we don't have a week-by-week breakdown of the box office numbers, but according to IMDb, the film would gross an estimated $11 to $12 million. JD, I know you've done a lot of research on the film. Do you have any insight into the lack of numbers as far as box office goes?
We're talking about a very low-budget, very indie, very sort of cobbled together production where the fact that they have any theatrical run, any theatrical numbers is astounding. Like you look at the story that went behind films like Friday the 13th and what they really did to sort of piece that together. And Sleepaway Camp is sort of the younger brother to that, where they had to jump through even more hoops. And again, the fact that they gained and garnered any recognition, it's a great testament to the work that the production staff and the actors and the writer and the director and everybody did to get this film created.
I did listen to a podcast and they were talking about the numbers for this movie. And I can't remember which one it was, but they had said that Sleepaway Camp actually beat Amityville 3D opening weekend at the box office. I just couldn't find any numbers to back it up. But, you know, knowing that they grossed 11 to 12 million, it's definitely believable.
So we're talking about a time in the early 80s. It's sort of like the Wild Wild West for horror movies. We're just on the brim. What, we've had Halloween. What year did Friday the 13th come out?
I want to say 80.
So, you know, we're talking like we're at the early stages of what it means to be a slasher movie. And I just don't, I don't think that the world was necessarily new what was going to happen throughout the 80s and then replicated throughout the 90s. And then to get us to where we are with everything that, you know, current horror movies do. I mean, it was sort of like, these were pioneers. These were trailblazers that were defining and building a genre in many regards. And they were setting the trope. So I think, you know, to compare it to Amityville Horror 3D, I want to say audience viewers might not necessarily have, it was like a coin flip.
Right.
I mean, it's not like you can go, you, I mean, you remember like between like 2003 to like, we'll say like 2009, the Asylum Productions was just in full force of just releasing like nonstop horror proper, like anything that they would throw like $100 there's a horror movie. It wasn't necessarily that like massive back then. There was a lot to see, there was a lot to do, but it didn't, the reach wasn't as far as it had grown yet.
That's a really good point. I want to talk about the top 10 movies of the week for August 18th, 1983, because there's a couple really good movies on here. The first number one movie at the box office that week was Amityville 3D, which was in the same opening week. Number two was The Big Chill. Number three, a Christmas classic opening that week as well, A Christmas Story. You shoot your eye out, kid. Number four, Never Say Never Again. Number five, A Night in Heaven, which was also debuting that weekend. Number six, All the Right Moves. Number seven, Richard Pryor, Here and Now. Number eight, The Smurfs and the Magic Flute. Nine, Deal of the Century. And 10, The Dead Zone. JD, any standouts for you on that top 10 list?
Well, first of all the Right Moves. Oh, boy. There's a movie with not all the right moves in it. Are we allowed to talk about that? That's the Tom Cruise football right movie, right?
I'm pretty sure it is, without fact-checking.
I really think that, for what it's worth, I don't think I've heard anybody reference that movie, name drop that movie, in the last 15 years. Like, listeners, do you know about this movie? Is this movie even allowed to be talked about? I don't know. Is it relevant? Is it like counterculture at this point? Tom Cruise football rape? It's like all the buzzwords that would get like squashed.
You know, the one standout for me was A Christmas Story. I watch that movie every single year, mostly because they play it for 24 hours straight. I think it's on TNT or TBS, one of those. Are you a Christmas Story guy, JD?
So for what it's worth, and I think we discussed this when we did the episode for the Santa Claus back in December, I am a big fan of Christmas Story. I think it's a fantastic movie. It is one that I definitely watch every Christmas season. But I think everybody that is a fan of Christmas movies has like their one movie that speaks to them. And it sounds like Christmas Story is your like go-to, you can't go to bed without. And I know maybe it's Christmas Vacation.
Merry Christmas, the shitter's full. Yep, it's that one.
For me, it's Scrooge. Scrooge is my that movie, but then Christmas Vacation and then Christmas Story. That's my rundown of need to, have to. If I don't watch those three movies, Christmas is canceled.
Yeah, I actually really like Scrooge a lot. I think that's a funny movie. Bill Murray at his best. It's right in his heyday, right in the 80s and 90s there. Do you remember what year that movie came out?
I'm just going to throw a dart like a fart in the wind and say 87.
Okay. Trying to picture you throwing a dart in a farty wind. Hey, were you a fan of Richard Pryor? We haven't talked about him yet on the podcast. I don't know when we're going to bring him up again.
So that's a great question. And much hate and shade to anybody that didn't vote for Brewster's Millions in the John Candy poll topic week. He's
who knows? Fantastic. We may get to it at some point.
We will get to Brewster's. Brewster's Millions is a great movie. That was my introduction to Richard Pryor, and I think he's great. I think he's fantastic. I think he's hilarious. Having watched some of his stand-up and having read a lot about his life in my golden years as I age into my 30s, I do really appreciate him. I think he's fantastic.
Awesome. Now, let's jump into some critic and audience response for the film. We're going to use Rotten Tomatoes to gauge the response of the audience here. Just to confirm, none of these numbers have been sent to JD beforehand. He doesn't have them pulled up in front of him. This is all off the top of his head. This is one of my favorite segments. I love listening to JD try and predict how he thinks people would have pictured this movie 35 years ago. So, JD, let's start with the critics. What do you think the response was to the film?
So, first of all, I'm legitimately surprised that there is going to be any feedback on Rotten Tomatoes about this film. Like, I was kind of expecting you to say, oh, there's nothing on Rotten Tomatoes about Sleepaway Camp, so we're going to skip this segment. So I'm mildly unprepared.
Just a fair warning, I think a lot of the response on there is probably from like the 2000s, from people just throwing in a review.
Ooh, thank you for saying that. That's a really great point. So that sort of changes my mindset, because I was picturing it as, and I always picture anytime that I'm sort of like analyzing and evaluating what I think that the Rotten Tomatoes review, I put myself in the mindset of somebody in the theaters when the movie comes out, what they're thinking, what they're anticipating, what they're loving, what they're hating, what they're going home and beating their children over. I'm sorry, did I say that? I'm sorry, I meant to say husking corn. So it's interesting that you sort of gave me that like insider's knowledge of that we're potentially looking at reviews that are coming 17, 20 years after the movie came out, when Rotten Tomatoes starts to become a thing. People are slushing to IMDb to like write their hate and their love. And this movie didn't include this part where I thought it would be better if the girl did this. Like, oh, well, okay. Well, thank you, Phone Jack Annihilator 87, for your input. Yeah, I looked up and saw a phone jack, and that's why I came up with that nickname.
Yeah, that's a good point that you make, though, because, I mean, obviously there's no internet in 83. Yeah, everybody's getting their news about movies right through the old newspaper. Get your paper! 5 cents! That's my best paperboy voice.
That's your newsy voice?
Get it while it's hot!
Brush off the pipes, hey? 5 cents, have enough to get the trolley home and get a cup of coffee and catch a moving picture show.
People from the 80s are like, that was like the 40s, you idiots.
And those people are dead now.
Oh. Wow, wow. All right, so give me a guess. Where do you think we're at here?
Okay, so I'm changing my mindset, and I'm looking at a reviewer that is being reacquainted to this movie. Maybe they saw it on a Blockbuster shelf. I don't think that a critic came out and saw this movie and applauds it. Like, I feel that while there is a great amount of originality to be had, and I feel it's a film in a young genre. Shit, I'm torn between three numbers. I'm going to cut the difference. I'm going to say 50% for critics.
Okay.
I'm leaning much lower than that. I feel like anybody critically that reviews this pulls down their pants and sits on the toilet. But enlighten me.
Okay, I'll give you the number in a minute. Give me your guess on the audience side.
So I'm the polar opposite with the audience. I really feel like the audience probably came into this with their eyes wide open, especially if they saw this after its theatrical release, if they saw it on its DVD release, if they saw it throughout the 2000s and the re-release and the sequels that came out, that they probably responded much better to it. There was some decent inventive deaths. There's some pretty great, memorable, campy acting. I feel like the audience probably liked this to the tune of 80%? 79%. 79%.
Okay. If you flipped around your two guesses, you'd be pretty close. So the audience only gave a 60%. The critics, however, gave it 80%. Certified Shut fresh.
Shut up. Seriously?
Yeah.
Son of a...
Are you back?
Oh, yeah. No, okay. Lay some knowledge on me, because I can't believe I had it inverse like that.
Okay. So here's...
I'm all for it, because I would prefer the critical response to be higher than the audience response, because at the end of the day, you as an audience member, I don't give a shit what you think. I don't give a shit. Like, you're just sitting there, your hands dug into your popcorn, you've got your other hand down your pants, maybe you're giving yourself like a 10-minute tickle, who knows.
Are they all Al Bundy in your mind?
Apparently. But I mean, my point being, that's the problem with modern cinema, is every time a blockbuster movie comes out, guess what? It's the best movie ever. 10 yep. out of 10. Unbeatable. Until what? Until the next summer, the next blockbuster movie comes out. And guess what that is? The best movie ever. So people tend to, earmuffs to our younger listeners, people tend to vote with their dicks on this, where whatever is hot in their face, is they're going to say is the best.
Okay.
So I'm definitely surprised and very almost giddy that the critics would have responded that high. Yes.
Awesome. Let's get to the reviewers here. Rumsey Taylor of Not Coming to a Theater Near You said, Sleepaway Camp belongs to a pool of slasher films known for their generic prolificity. It must be noted that this is one of the first and best. Thoughts on Rumsey Taylor?
I would resoundedly agree with that. Like, that's my take and my love of this movie is, again, it's not winning a shelf of awards, but it's in the Wild West. It's in the premature days of a growing genre where it looked at what people did before it and it said, those are great ideas. And then it said, here's some more great ideas. And then the mother effing twist ending.
Since you mentioned Wild Wild West, you want to sing the song?
Wild Wild West, Jim West, Desperado, Rough Riders, no you don't got nada.
Awesome.
I can keep going.
Ed Gonzalez of Slant Magazine gave the film 2 of 4 stars. He said, it evokes a period of time before Ritalin and Common Sense. Any thoughts on that review?
What was the date of that review?
I didn't look up the date. But it was for Slant Magazine, so I got to guess, like, 2010.
So my point being, that's a very postmodern look at a film that came out years and years ago. Like, obviously, yes. Like, back then, you didn't give your kids Ritalin. They had a problem. That's why you sent them to sleepaway camp.
Good point. And then the last one is from Bill Gibron of DVDtalk.com. He said, Sleepaway Camp is a gritty, sleazy, grade Z ripoff of what Sean Cunningham and the gang more or less perfected over at Crystal Lake. He didn't like the movie, it sounds like. Oof. Thoughts on that one?
You know, imitation is the most sincere form of flattery. Is that how the phrase goes? Yes, obviously, Sleepaway Camp is no Friday the 13th. Has anybody ever said that? Our viewers, no, like, to our fans of either movie, I mean... Sleepaway Camp is one of my all-time favorite horror movies, but it's still not Friday the 13th. But you can't knock a film for not being that. It is its own film in many regards. So it has its own legs.
If this is a knockoff of Friday the 13th and Friday the 13th is a ripoff of Halloween, what does that make Halloween? Just original? I don't know.
The greatest holiday on Earth. You see what I did there?
I like what you did there.
Thank you.
All right, JD. So what are you looking forward to most when we dive into the full review of Sleepaway Camp on Wednesday?
For me, there are a lot of great connections and moments in this story, in this film, of the characters. I think there are a great number of conspiracy theories to be had. about things that are implied in the story, but never necessarily expressed. So I'm looking forward to hopefully having a great conversation with you, Kyle, and then with our audience. I would love, if this can be our most interactive episode, maybe we have a call-in portion where people can dial in as we're recording and we can take callers. Is that a thing? Do podcasts do that? I think that's called a radio program. Damn it.
Yeah, we definitely don't have a radio. I mean, I guess we could just give them your cell phone. They're not getting my number.
Well, at the end of the episode, we'll give them my phone number. You guys call me.
Is it still 1-800-SPANK-ME?
Heyo, well played. Hey, literally $50 to the first person that tweets at us what that's a reference to. I am covering the costs.
There you go. We're going to be back, like I said, next week on Wednesday with Sleepaway Camp. Fair warning, it may come out on like Thursday or Friday. We got a little bit of a vacation coming up on my end, so it'll be my fault, not JD's. But we'll get that out to you guys as soon as we can. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. All full episodes are up there, as well as Google Play and YouTube. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe while you're at it. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/backintimepod. And then you can follow us on the web at backintimepod.wordpress.com or shoot us an email, backintimepodcast@gmail.com. But for now, it is time to climb back into the DeLorean, punch in today's date, and return back to present day. We'll talk to you later this week. See ya.
Pants pulled up, shirt pulled down. That's the way I like to fuck.